It's so nice to see you tonight. Thank you for being here to study God's Word. Before we get started tonight, I want to thank the congregation here at White House for allowing me to be a part of this gospel meeting. I believe, and I may have lost count, I think this is the third time, maybe the fourth time you've allowed me to be here for a meeting, and I deeply appreciate it. This is my mom's home congregation. She was baptized down below the church building here when she was 13 years old. I found that out from a lady at Hackleburg that was baptized the same day that my mother was several years ago. And so we've always had a nice place in our hearts for the White House congregation. I was looking out back today and saw the tables out there, and I remember many times having meals off those tables. And speaking of meals, I want to thank you from the bottom of my stomach and the top of it and all around it for the wonderful meals. They've been great. Over here tonight, I was looking at all that food, and I thought about when the Lord fed the 5,000, there were 12 basketfuls left over. When he fed the 4,000, now that was in Gentile territory, so it had to be less, so it was 4,000, and took up 7 basketfuls. I don't know how many basketfuls were left tonight, but I guarantee you there was plenty of it. And thank you so much for your hospitality and kindness all week. Thank you also for allowing me to preach my first gospel sermon here 49 years ago. The day before I had been 18, but that day I turned 19. And well, I think maybe Friday I was 18, and then Saturday I turned 19. But thank you for allowing that. That was 49 years ago, and I do appreciate that very, very much. Let's get to the Bible text, and I'd like for you to follow along with me. We want to look tonight at Acts chapter 24, and before we get into it, I want to tell you a true story that happened to me when I was a young man. I was studying with a man named Tom, and we had studied several nights, and about after a third or fourth study, I asked Tom if he wanted to obey the gospel. And Tom said, "No, I know what to do, but I'm not going to do it." Well, what do you say when somebody says, he went a step further. He said, "I probably know more about than you do now." And I thought, "You probably do." But anyway, he wouldn't obey the gospel. He was meeting, I believe his heart was not right at that time. I'm relieved to tell you that years later, he did obey the gospel, and, you know, he became an elder in the church eventually in his life. Now, I say all that to say it's not up to us who obeys the gospel. We plant the seed, as Brother Jamie Long said in his prayer, we plant the seed, but we know that God brings forth the increase. So don't ever get discouraged when you teach someone, when you live a godly life before them, and they don't obey the gospel. Who knows, now that seed has been planted, something good could come from it in the future. The reason I bring that up and tell you the story about Tom is that that same thing is going to happen to Paul in this chapter. He's going to try his very best to teach the gospel to Felix, but Felix has ulterior motives, and he does not obey the gospel. Satan is going to raise his ugly head every time we're making progress. When we're serving the Lord faithfully, Satan is going to do his very best to disrupt what is going on. But the call for us is to stand firm in the faith and keep teaching, keep living for the Lord, and God will bring forth the increase. Let's get started with our discussion of the text. And let's read together Acts 24, verse 1. "And after 5 days, Ananias the high priest ascended with the elders and with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul." Notice here that Tertullus is some translations will call him an orator. I think that's exactly what he was. Today, I think we might call him an attorney or a lawyer. But he was an orator. He probably had been hired by the Jews to do this, to make this speech, and he is going to be a very, very tedious in his approach. Notice in verses 2 and 3 of chapter 24, he begins by flattering Felix. Now remember, we talked a little bit about this last night, but for those of you who are not here, Felix's wife, his second wife, was the youngest daughter of King Agrippa. And it was probably a politically appointed place. And Felix had divorced his wife and married Drusilla. Drusilla was just 14 years old, and that was unusual. Usually women married at age 17 at that time and men at age 27. And that's the reason there were so many widows. The life expectancy at that time was 48. And so there were a lot of men who died pretty early and a lot of widows. But nonetheless, notice the flattery that he does in his case against Paul. Notice Tertullus begins to accuse him, saying, "Seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that the very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, we accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, and all with all thankfulness." Do you notice how these flattering words flow out of Tertullus's mouth? But notice what he calls Paul. Notice when he says about Paul, verse 4, "Nevertheless, that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee, that thou wouldst hear us by thy clemency for a few words. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, and a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes." Well, that's a lie. That's a lie. Tertullus may have been an eloquent orator, but he's accusing Paul of doing things that he did not do. Now, let's look at that word, a pestilent fellow. Do you notice the word "a" is probably italicized, and "fellow" is italicized? The original language says, "Where we have found this man pestilent." And the word literally means he's a plague. You ever been called a plague? Well, let's not go there. But he called Paul a plague, is basically what he's calling him. And he's saying that he is causing a disruption, a mover of sedition. In other words, he's leading people away from the truth and leading away from Judaism. And notice here, he says he's a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. By the way, Acts 24 and verse 5 is the only place in the New Testament where Nazarene is used to describe followers of Jesus. You remember that Christians, disciples were called Christians first at Antioch? Well, here Tertullus is referring to them as Nazarenes. In other words, a follower of this man of the Nazarenes. Now, we don't see that as a title or a description of the church by the Lord or his people. This is an enemy of the church that is saying these things. And so let's notice some more of the accusations. He says, "Who also hath gone out to profane the temple, whom we took, and we would have judged according to our law." By the way, all translations don't include that "we have judged according to the would have judged according to the law," but I believe it belongs there. Because what Tertullus is saying, if you Romans had not got in the way, we would have taken care of this. In other words, we would have already stoned him to death. Paul did not profane the temple. They're making an accusation that he carried a Gentile into the temple, which he did not. And Tertullus makes them sound like heroes for seizing Paul. And he wants Felix to examine Paul himself so that they can find out the truth. I believe the crowds of Jews were there, but they were quiet, and they just wanted Tertullus to do the speaking. I think what their intention was to overwhelm Felix by all the people there accusing Paul, but Paul was not guilty of any of this. And now it's time for Paul's defense. And he's going to start out doing something kind of unusual, because usually he just goes right to preaching the gospel. But this time, he is going to do just a little bit of his own defense. Felix nods to Paul and signals that he can speak now. And Paul says he cheerfully makes his defense. Now notice the words of Jesus to Paul. This was working on his confidence as Paul relates what the Lord said to him and how he retells his conversion story. And so notice here, let's start with Paul, verse 10. Then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, answered, "For so much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge of this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship." In other words, you can investigate this. This was just 12 days ago. "And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city. Neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me." Verse 14, "But this I confess unto you, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, for there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust." Let's stop there for just a moment. Paul now is going to move from defense, saying, "I'm innocent of these things." He's going to start moving more toward teaching the gospel. Isn't that a wonderful blessing? Paul had that ability. Whether it meant life or death, he had the opportunity to preach the gospel. And you remember, he was in a strait betwixt the two. He desired to go be with the Lord, but it was better for them that he remained there. But it didn't really matter to Paul how this turned out. He wasn't afraid to die. But Paul says, you know, it's not been more than 12 days. You remember that we read that? And the point is, if Felix wants to investigate this, he can investigate it. He said, I wasn't guilty of stirring up crowds. And then notice what he says. "Neither can they prove the things which they now accuse me." They have no evidence. They have no proof. Now, when they start arguing with Paul, they're arguing with one of the most educated people there. And not only that, he is empowered by the Holy Spirit as an apostle. They're not going to get the best of Paul. They don't realize that, but they're not going to get the best of the Paul. I want to tell you about a fellow that Paul reminds me of. Some of y'all may have heard of him. His name is Joey Spann. I had the privilege of working with Joey at a congregation just north of Nashville several years ago. And when we would be praying, Joey would say, "Things are going too good. The devil's going to raise his ugly head. You just wait and see. The devil's going to raise his ugly head." Well, years later, I'm sure you saw it on the news, a man entered the church building where Joey was preaching. While Joey was preaching, he had shot and killed a woman on the parking lot, and he came in and shot six or eight people in the worship, while worship was going on. Shot Joey, shot his wife, and as they were wheeling Joey out, they said that he said to his wife, "Peggy, they've killed me." But think about it, Joey survived, his wife survived. And he's still preaching the gospel. But you better believe Satan is going to rear his ugly head. And whenever things are going wonderfully well in the community and in the church, Satan's going to find a way to throw a monkey wrench in that. You can count on it. How many times in your lifetime have you seen someone stir up a stink in the Lord's church and cause division? We won't go into all of that. But I just want to point out that Paul is deciding right now that he is not going to let that happen. "But I confess unto thee," he's telling the truth, and he says, they call it a heresy, That's the way I worship. The way I worship, they call it a heresy. But then notice he talks about the resurrection. Now, the resurrection means nothing to Felix. But Paul sees an opportunity, not to defend himself, but to teach and preach the gospel. And so he says, you know, I have a clear conscience before God and man. He's already said that in the previous chapter. And he says, notice here he talks about verse 17. After many years, I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings. Now let's talk about that for just a few moments. Remember in the epistles, this is the only time it's mentioned in the book of Acts. But you'll remember in the epistles of Paul, he mentions taking up this collection for the poor saints at Jerusalem. And this was Gentile churches taking up contribution for Jewish churches because they're one in Christ Jesus. Now think about that. I doubt the Jewish Christians would have wanted to take up money for the Gentile Christians. But the Gentile Christians are taking up money. Why would there be poor Jews in Jerusalem? Do you remember on the day of Pentecost how many people were baptized into Jesus Christ? They were Jews. They were there from 17 nations. And they were all there. And 3,000 obeyed the gospel. They're not going to be able to go back home. They're going to be disowned because they've left Judaism. If you left Judaism, you're going to be hated just like Paul was hated. And if you can't go home and you can't do business, what are you going to do in Jerusalem? There were poor saints there. And the they were Christians. And Paul was very, very concerned about them. But back to Paul's defense, he said, they found me purified in the temple without any crowd or tumult. Remember, because Paul had been in Gentile territory, he had to shave his head and also, or have his hair shorn, and also pay for four others to have theirs shorn. You had to go through a seven-day purification. If you'd been in Gentile territory, you had to go through a purification. But some Jews from Asia, not even Jerusalem, Jews from Asia, they ought to be here before you making this accusation. You know, Jewish people are all over the world. There are more Jews in America, in the United States, than there are in Israel. They're all over the world, and I'm not running them down. I know some wonderful Jewish people. In fact, we have about 3,000 Jews who are Messianic Jews who have converted to Christianity, and they're hated by their own people. So Paul says to Felix, let them say what wrongdoing they found in me. They hadn't been able to find anything wrong with him, and he's going to appear before seven Roman officials, and none of them can find anything wrong with him, that he's done anything wrong. He says, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called into question by you this day. And this is what I was talking about a few moments ago on his third missionary journey, which he spent most of that in Ephesus. He collected funds for the poor saints in Jerusalem from among the Gentile churches. This is the only place it's mentioned in Acts, but it's also talked about in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 4. 2 Corinthians is mentioned in chapters 8 and 9, and Romans 15, verses 25 through 31. So that's important. You might wonder, why are you bringing that out? It's important because it's going to come up again when Paul is trying to teach Felix. Now, Paul says Felix has a more perfect knowledge of the way. Why is that? Remember, Felix's wife was Jewish, and the Jews knew about Christianity. They did not like it, and Felix would have known about Christianity. A lot of the Roman officials did not know that there was a difference in Christianity and the Jewish religion. The Jews was a legal religion. The Roman Empire recognized them as a legal religion. They did not recognize Christianity as a legal religion. And when Paul eventually is sent to Rome and tried before Nero, who fiddled while Rome was burning, according to history, And he used human beings, Christians, as human torches to light up the Colosseum in Rome. He used them basically as street lights. There was a terrible, terrible time by Nero. And so that was what's going on at that particular time. And now Felix decides that he's going to wait to the chief commander, Claudius Lysias, gets there to listen to the case. I don't know how Felix learned about Christianity, but I have to think it probably, he was more familiar with Christianity and with the Jewish religion than anybody really realized. And Paul was basically put under house arrest. Last night, someone said something like, well, he's under house arrest. That's exactly right. And he's kept in custody and had some liberty. But notice, some friends were able to come to minister and come to him. Look at verse 23. He commanded a centurion to keep Paul and let him have liberty, and that he should forbid none of his acquaintance to minister or come to him. I want to make two observations about that. Why did Paul need somebody to come and minister to him? Minister there means to serve him. Did it have something to do with his thorn in the flesh? I don't know. But for some reason, he needed those who would come and visit him and provide for him. But then notice the next thing about that. A centurion was to keep Paul. I want to ask you a question. How many times do you think the centurion heard the gospel? Everybody Paul saw, he wanted to teach the gospel. You think that centurion ever heard the gospel? I believe the centurion heard the gospel every day. We have no record of the centurion obeying the gospel, but you better believe he was exposed to it. And notice here, as Paul was being kept under house arrest, after some days, Felix brings his young wife, Drusilla, to him. Isn't it a shame that someone so ungodly as Felix and Drusilla are going to pass judgment on Paul? Other than Jesus Christ, I believe Paul's the greatest missionary that's ever lived. And here we have these people of the world that's going to judge the great Apostle Paul. This is pretty personal, and I apologize in advance for talking to you about it. I'm going to give you an example. In March of 2006, I had worked with Matthew Winkler that past summer, previous summer, at a camp. He and I taught a Bible class together. And he was preaching in Selmer, Tennessee, congregation where I now serve. And I don't know what happened, and I don't know we'll ever know what happened for sure, but Matthew was dead. And Mary, his wife, was arrested. That's been a long time ago, but Nancy Grace and other people drug the church, the Lord's church, through the mud. They had experts on there saying that we were a cult, that all these things, and they lied. It is terrible when the outside world is making judgments on the Lord's church. The congregation where I serve now was over 200 at the time. On a good Sunday, we might have 95, because after that, the women seem to side with Mary, the men seem to side with Matthew, and a lot of people left and went other places. Why do I bring that up? I don't know what happened. But I know in court, they made Matthew look awful. They made him look like some type of beast. He wasn't alive to even tell it. And I want to commend his father, Dan Winkler, and his mom, Diane. They exhibited great Christian service, great attitude all throughout that. Cameras would be focused on them. That's what's happening here. Paul is being tried by Felix, an adulterer and a fornicator, an ungodly man. Do you see Satan is raising his ugly head? He's doing his very, very best to do as much problem as he possibly can. And you know, that kind of thing is still going on today. We're at war. And I'm not talking about guns and tanks and planes. I'm talking about we're in a war against Satan. And don't ever forget it. Because if we let our guard down, he's going to do his very, very best, Satan will, to make sure that he destroys us, because he hates the church and wants to hurt it. Now, Drusilla was Jewish. Her mama was Jewish. She was Jewish. And she's a member of the Herod family. She's, as I mentioned earlier, youngest daughter of King Herod Agrippa II. As Paul reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment. Now, notice those three things about righteousness. He's talking to Felix, this pagan. He talks to Felix about righteousness, about self-control, and about this coming judgment. You know what he's doing, don't you? He's trying to teach the gospel to Felix. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'd been on trial, I'd probably been doing everything I possibly could to get off. But that time Paul used to try to teach the gospel. And I think one of the most important verses, notice verse 25, and as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled. Some translations say there, he was alarmed. It's a lot more than that. The original language says he was terrified. Why? Paul had taught him the gospel, and he knew he needed to do something. But notice what he says, go thy way for this time, and if I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. When I have a convenient season, I'll call for thee. We have no record of Felix ever calling for Paul. We have no record of Felix ever obeying the gospel. You know, on the day of judgment, I think some of the saddest people that will ever be at the day of judgment, and everyone will appear before the judgment seat, will be the rich young ruler who was face to face with Jesus and walked away sadly. And Felix, who had the opportunity to obey the gospel right then, but he passed it up. And never again, as far as we know, had the opportunity to be taught the gospel. Respond. He's kind of like Tom that I told you about earlier. Heard the gospel but rejected it. So close, but yet the ESV, which is typically a very reliable translation, but I think they missed it here. He was alarmed. No, Felix was terrified. There's more than just a simple alarm. It's probably even the idea of fear or terror in what Paul was describing. Felix was that close, but he wouldn't obey the gospel. He wouldn't do anything, you know. We have several preachers here tonight, and I'm grateful to the Lord that you're here, that everyone's here. I wonder how many of you have seen, as I have, during the invitation, people who wanted to respond, but they gripped the back of the pew till their knuckles had turned white. And I can just imagine the devil is saying to them, it'll be over in 3 minutes. If you can hang on for 3 minutes, it'll be over. And I wonder how many of those people never obeyed the gospel. You know, this week, tonight will be the seventh time that we've extended the Lord's invitation this week. Seventh time. There are 3 billion people on the face of the earth that will never hear it one time. Let's never, ever take it for granted. Several years ago, there was a young teenager in the congregation where I was preaching at the time. We had 702 people the last Sunday I was there. Her name was Mika. And I remember Mika. I know right where Mika sat. She sat in the balcony. She was a high school student. And that afternoon, she went home and took her own life. And I've always wondered, what could I have said different to Mika? That was the last sermon she ever heard. When will be the last sermon we ever hear? None of us know. But if we need to obey the gospel or ask for the prayers of the Lord's people, we don't need to miss it, because we never know when that will be our last opportunity. I'm not trying to tell deathbed stories, not trying to scare anyone, but Felix needed to obey the gospel, and the example of Felix is lived out every day by individuals who choose to live contrary to God's will, even though they know what to do, know to what they're supposed to do. Now, the truth is, we're provided with more information about Felix's missed his mindset when Luke says he was hoping to receive money from Paul. Look at verse 26. He also hoped that money should have been given him of Paul, that he might loose him. Wherefore he sent for him the oftener and communed with him. He had an ulterior motive. He thought Paul might offer him a bribe, or those people coming to Paul to minister him might come up with some money. Probably he'd heard about that collection being taken up for the poor saints in Jerusalem. He wanted some. And so under false pretenses, he let Paul come back. And then notice 2 years go by. 2 years go by. And Porticus Festus succeeds Felix. He's also married to one of Herod's daughters. Isn't that ironic? Little nepotism going on there, a little politics. And so Porcius Festus came into Felix's room. And I want to show you something there in verse 27. We're almost through, but I want us to look at something right here. Felix wanted to do the Jews a favor. Verse 27, but after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. What a scoundrel. What a scoundrel. And here he was judging one of the greatest missionaries that's ever lived. What lessons can we learn? Wow. Lots of good lessons here. Let's just close with three. All who live godly shall suffer persecution. There are going to be times when good, godly people are going to suffer because Satan's going to see to it. He may not strike them just like he did Job, but he's going to cause them trouble. And when you're going through hardship and trouble, even sickness and death, make sure you give the person credit to whom credit's due. That comes from Satan. I hear so many people blame the Lord. Why would the Lord do that? You make sure you give credit where credit's due. Next, when we're falsely accused like Paul does, let's realize that that's common. It's been common throughout history for Christians. If you haven't read Fox's Book of Martyrs, you can get a used copy for less than $2. It describes how people have lost their lives across the years. When people started return to baptizing for remission of sins, people had stopped doing it for so long. When people started being baptized for remission of sins, they would take them out in a boat, tie rocks around their feet to a rope, and put them in the water. They drowned them. Our brothers and sisters in Christ have gone through so much. And if we complain about the climate in the building, the hardness of the seats, some petty little thing, We are forgetting what our brothers and sisters have experienced across the centuries. And finally, take every opportunity you can to teach the gospel. Win them without a word if you have to, but teach the gospel. Teach it to people that nobody else cares about, and teach it to the highest officials in the land. Make sure that you take advantage of every opportunity. But tonight, if you're in Felix's shoes, don't wait for a more convenient season. This last night of the gospel meeting, if you need to obey the gospel and be baptized into Christ, as Dwight was Sunday night, then do that. Everything's ready. Is your heart ready? And tonight, if you have strayed from the commitment you made to the Lord, it's time to come home. Like the father of the prodigal son, watching to see when his boy was coming back, the Heavenly Father awaits your decision as together we stand and sing.